Uncensored Radio Free America.
Rick Adams is on.
Yes, we are. All right, we're back on this Thursday evening, thanks to the Lord. We give him all the thanks, at least I do. And we are here on rbnlive.com. Spread the word. We are growing, and we are going places. So hopefully we'll be able to someday say we're in the number two or three or four category, just slightly behind maybe the Rush Limbaugh Excellence in Babelcasting Network. We're getting there, though. We are. Tonight, we're waiting to hear from the man who wrote the book on economics, Federal Reserve, the Illuminati, if you will, while others were still in their mother's twinkling eyes. A man who lived through the Depression, and I think he did, didn't he? Yeah, he did. And he lived through the war, of course. Well, he was born that time, and the war came along, World War II. And since then, of course, he's had a lifetime of knowledge and personal knowledge, not just somebody who read books. So that's why he authored many books. And that's Eustace Mullins. Eustace Mullins is always very popular on this program, or in any program, where he appears. Sometimes he's very unpopular, obviously, with certain people. So, popular or unpopular, we like chitty-chattying with Eustace Mullins. And what better time to talk to Eustace than right now? We've had this revolving door again, change of seats in the Federal Reserve, that wonderful institution that is notably, according even to the media pundits, most powerful post in the world. Now, they say the second most powerful to the president. Well, of course, we know it's just the other way around. In fact, Bush has very little power compared to the Federal Reserve. And if you want to go back in history and look at the artificially created recessions and depressions and look at presidents who were victimized by them and helped by them, well, we can do that too. But that tells you the power that this institution, this engine of inflation and devaluation, has over the American public. It is probably the most powerful institution that we can think of. So, we're waiting to hear if Eustace will be allowed to come on the program. We have a difficult time getting a hold of him, but he knows the number, and he knows he's going to be calling in if he doesn't hear from us. All right. Anyway, our number, of course, is 800-313-9443, as ever and always. And I'm Rick Adams, Radio Avenger, the Paul Revere of talk radio, sounding the alarm of what is to come. And if you go to a browser, and you just go back to a search engine, and you type in Eustace Mullins' name, Eustace E-U-S, what is it, S-T-A-C-E, Mullins, M-U-L-L-I-N-S, you'll see a whole myriad of sites come up with his name and his works. We'll be back to talk about them with him, hopefully, in just a few moments. Yes, indeed, we are back. And we do have Eustace Mullins. Hello, Eustace. How are you, Eustace? Are you there, Eustace?
Oh, I'm right here.
All right, we got you. We finally got you to call us, huh?
Oh, yes. Well, you gave me the number.
Well, thank God. Thank God for that, because, you know, it's very difficult to get through the Mossad to get a hold of you.
Oh, everybody complains about it, but
we've got to do something about it. We've got to get the phone company to straighten this out for you.
Well, I got after the phone company, and I notified the FBI counterterrorism division, but, of course, they never responded.
Well, no wonder. No wonder you haven't had any luck. Boy, that's like going right to the Mossad itself, huh?
Well, it is.
Almost.
Actually, the FBI works for Mossad.
Yeah, well, that's what we're saying, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And, anyway, it's good to have you back, Eustace, because you've been a mainstay of this program and many others, by the way, over the years. And we thank God for the fact that we've had you now for a while, and you have been such a wealth of knowledge and such a wealth of
information. Oh, well, I'm still on top of everything. Everything
I know.
That's going on, I know all about it.
I know that. I'm very much aware of that. You, you are... a wealth of encyclopedia knowledge. And the
it's amazing.
Reserve.
I still have it all on the tip of my tongue. I don't have to pause and worry about a name or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to do it.
The name Ezra Pound comes to mind. And for those new listeners who don't know about this great individual who foreshadowed you, tell us a little bit about this great American, Ezra Pound.
Well, he was a dominant... literary personality of the entire 20th century, mm-hmm. not only in the United States, but in Europe also.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've only had three writers in the United States. We had Walt Whitman and Mark Twain and Ezra Pound. That's all we've got.
And Ezra Pound had met with some misfortune himself, didn't he, because of his great works?
Well, he suffered more than I've ever had to suffer, I must say.
Yeah.
He spent 13 and a half years in a cell... at St. Elizabeth Hospital in Washington, D.C., which they would be ashamed to put the Al-Qaeda people in Guantanamo.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Well, anyway, you have followed in his footsteps, of course. In the book, the Federal Reserve Banking System, it was basically told to us by him, by Ezra Pound, what was going on at the time. And this is going through the Depression, the 40s, and so forth. And you lived through that era.
Oh, I lived through all of it.
Yeah. Yeah, the secrets of the Federal Reserve, right?
Yes, indeed. And it is, they were secrets, but they're secrets no longer.
Well, at the time that the Fed was proposed, they had this great meeting, these international banksters, I guess it was Jekyll Island, right?
Yeah, that was their private club.
And that was 1910, huh?
Thanksgiving week, 1910.
Wow, what a nice week.
They said that the membership of the Jekyll Island Club at that time comprised one-sixth of the wealth of the entire world.
Mm-hmm.
So these were not pikers by any means.
And no wonder they met in secret. They had something to hide, didn't they?
They met there because they only had one-sixth of the wealth of the entire world, and they wanted it all. That was the whole idea.
I like the way you put that. That reminds me of...
I'm a very simplistic person.
Well, I love that. It reminds me of something Tom Anderson used to say, and that was just a few years ago, Karl Marx passed away, and he said there were very few people in attendance at his funeral. Most of our State Department people were too young to attend.
Oh, that's very good. That's a good comment.
Well, it is.
It's so ironic because
it's true.
When FDR came into Washington in 1933, he had a totally communist administration.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he did, didn't he? And he boasted about that.
Oh, yes. And his purpose of his presidency was to grant official recognition to the Soviet Union, because the Soviet Union was still regarded as an outlaw nation by the rest of the world.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, that whole business about recognition is interesting, because you go back and you study the history of extending diplomatic recognition to countries. Even Woodrow Wilson himself was unwilling to do what Roosevelt was able to put across.
Oh, he wanted to, but he didn't have the power.
He was unable to get it across.
Yeah, he couldn't get it through.
Yeah, exactly. The time wasn't right. as they say. But
no,
then
it wasn't right at
when,
all.
When Roosevelt was installed as Pope or whatever, you know, he wanted to be Pope. First thing he did, one of the first things he did anyway, was to create this recognition principle, extending diplomatic recognition to Red Bolshevik Russia. And that meant that then we could deal with them on an economic, political basis. And we would rescue them from their communist dictatorship. Wasn't that nice?
Well, that really appalled the rest of the world, because the rest of the world considered the Bolsheviks a bunch of thugs and murderers.
And they were.
Well, of course.
That is just unbelievable. Now, I'd like to spend a little time tonight really talking about the the Federal Reserve itself, because you have done great authorship on this subject and yeoman work. So I'd like you to take us, as they say, Eustace, on a little safari through the jungle of the Federal Reserve and tell us exactly how this whole impetus got started in 1912 and 1913, and then we'll talk about the nuts and bolts of this private central banking system. How's that?
Oh, that's fine. But, the Federal Reserve was actually passed into law by a setup, the panic of 1907. Mm-hmm. They artificially injured a financial panic in 1907, and it closed down half of the banks in the United States. And so then they had a great outcry that we must have banking reform. See, these were reformers.
Oh, like the agrarian reformer Mao Zedong, huh?
Yes.
Well, my goodness.
Oh, now, they're going to reform things if they have to kill all the people to get it done.
Right. There you go. And you know, prior to 1907, in the 1890s, was it, we had what was called by them the so-called silver crisis, or panic.
Oh, yes.
In the 1890s. You're familiar with that, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, the monetization of silver. You know, William Jennings Bryan was the champion of that. He said, "We shall not crucify mankind on a cross of gold."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that was a very colorful speech, but no one knows it today. They've forgotten all about it.
Can you tell us offhand, Eustace, what happened in that period of time, the late 1800s, with the banking system and the silver situation? What is it that was going on that these banks were doing to try to instigate the beginnings of the Fed?
Well, what was going on was the enthronement of the corporations at the end of the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
See, even Abraham Lincoln warned against this.
Mm.
And he said it's going to enshrine all the corporations. That's what we had. We came out of the Civil War in 1865 as a corporate state.
Mm-hmm.
See, Mussolini didn't invent the corporate state. It was invented here in the United States.
And Lincoln was opposed to this?
He went along with it to a certain extent, mm-hmm. but he didn't want them to go as far as they did.
Mm-hmm.
Because he felt it was a little too much.
Yeah, the time wasn't right. It's interesting, after the assassination of Lincoln, the changes in the money system that took place, just like the assassination of JFK.
Mm. Oh, yes, it was a duplicate thing.
Yeah.
I always said that if JFK had started history at Harvard, when he was at Harvard, he would have known that they murdered Lincoln for printing the greenbacks, so he went and did the same thing.
Yeah, the book Lincoln Money Martyred comes to mind.
Mm-hmm.
That was a great book, by the way.
It really was.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's on the ADL's hate list.
Oh, I bet it is.
Or condemnation list.
Well, you know, it's funny. The ADL is against anti-Semitism, but they're also against any criticism of bankers.
That's kind of weird, isn't it?
They've
accused you of being all of these terrible things, and you've hardly ever even mentioned them.
Well, I never mentioned them at all.
Yeah. So how do you figure?
Well, they just zeroed in on me. You know, when I published my book in 1953, mm-hmm. the first criticism of it came right from the Anti-Defamation League, which I had never heard of at that time.
Right.
And they said that my book was virulently anti-Semitic, which absolutely mystified me, because people still, commentators and talk show hosts and so forth, call me up and they say, "Eustace, they say your book is anti-Semitic, but I can't find anything anti-Semitic in it." And that's because there isn't anything anti-Semitic in it.
Now, when you got this information, you got the tar brush, what did you do with it? Did you contact these fine people at the ADL?
You don't have to contact them at all. They boast that they monitor people.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, they maintain surveillance on them. And that's what they did. They boasted that they have monitored me for the last 50 years.
It sounds like that would be a basis of a lawsuit there.
It's a violation of civil rights. If I monitor you 24 hours a day, well, you could sue me.
And the fact that they called your book anti-Semitic is...
Well, that's libelous because there was nothing in it.
And you never sued them for that, huh?
Oh, no. I sued them finally for $100 million. But my lawsuit went before Judge Harold Green.
Mm-hmm.
And Judge Harold Green was an Austrian named Heinz Grunhaus. And when he came to this country, he anglicized his name and called himself Harold Green. And he broke up AT&T, you know, wrecked our whole telephone system.
Uh-huh. That was the same gentleman, huh?
That was our Harold.
So you're saying what, that he was Jewish and he changed his name? Is that what it was?
Oh, yes. He was an Austrian Jew named Heinz Grunhaus.
Mm.
And
I
only found it in one. He gave one interview in the Washington Post in the 1940s, and he said that his name was Heinz Grunhaus. And he never gave another interview during his entire career.
Right. Okay. Interesting stuff we're digging into. The Federal Reserve, the secrets, and much more. Eustace Mullins, my guest, join us right here on Uncensored Radio Free America. I'm Rick Adams.
Reserve isn't federal at all. It isn't even close to being constitutional. It's fraudulent, leash of this country up against the wall. Oh, the Federal Reserve isn't federal at all. Would you like to know the reasons why your taxes are so high? Would you like to know what fuels inflation every time you buy? Would you like to know who takes the biggest slice out of your pie? It's the Federal Reserve, and I'm here to tell you why. It's not that complicated to explain in layman terms. When something's really rotten, it is sure to crawl with worms. And that something really rotten happened in this nation's past. It's been feeding on our prosperity until now we're sinking fast. Whoa, the Federal Reserve isn't federal at all. It isn't even close to being constitutional. It's fraudulently shoved this country up against the wall. Oh, the Federal Reserve isn't federal at all. How would you like to print up money on your very own private press and loan it out to all your friends at staggering high interest? Bet it wouldn't take too long until you own the whole neighborhood. Well, that's what the Fed's been doing since our Congress said they could. Now, our Congress shirked their duty back in December 1913. That's when the value of our money changed from gold to inky green. And when they shrugged the Constitution off, they damned this nation's fate. It was a blatant violation of Article 1 and Section 8. Whoa, the Federal Reserve isn't federal at all. It isn't even close to being constitutional. It's fraudulently shoved this country up against the wall. Oh, the Federal Reserve isn't federal at all. You got the FBI, the FCC, the Federal Trade Commission Agency, and they all have one thing in common, that is they're federal. But here's one thing, if you haven't guessed. There ain't anything federal about the Federal Express, and the only thing federal about the Reserve is that it's criminal! Now if I was to tell you that we're under martial law, and there ain't no sense in waiting for the final axe to fall, and that the money that we're spending's really military script, would you say that I've gone crazy, or would you think that I've been hit? Whoa, the Federal Reserve isn't federal at all. It isn't even close to being constitutional.
It's fraudulent. We shove this country up against the wall. Oh, the Federal Reserve isn't federal at all. No, the Federal Reserve isn't federal.
It's just criminal
and all.
Let's just dump it. All right. Well, I was going to play just a bit of the song, but, you know, I couldn't help. I couldn't resist.
Oh, that's
having
a terrific
the whole
song.
You like that,
Justice
Mullins? Yeah. Well, you know, it's catching on. A lot of people like that.
It should catch on because it's something that affects everybody.
And it sure does. Going back a little bit in history, I hadn't realized myself for a while until I discovered that Federal Reserve notes were actually declared unconstitutional, null and void by a court, by a judge.
Oh, yes.
And that judge was Martin V. Mahoney in the township of Scott County, Minnesota.
Oh,
are
I
you
remember.
Familiar?
I think they finally murdered him, didn't they?
I don't know. I really don't know. But some brilliant listener out there might be able to add some information. All I know is that this judge, ruled, and this was January 8th, I believe, or 6th, around there, 1969.
Oh, yeah.
The court had filed a notice of refusal to allow appeal with the clerk of the district court, Hugo Heritage, for the county of Scott in the state of Minnesota. Notice of refusal to allow appeal to Hugo, Henges, clerk of the district court, plaintiff, First National Bank of Montgomery, and defendant Jerome Daly. And in this, he pursuant to law, refuses to allow the appeal to the above entitled action, refuses to make entry of such allowance in the undersigned a docket. This whole business of the Federal Reserve System is detailed in this particular treatise, if you will, on the subject, and I want to get into it when we come back from the break. We still have a few seconds or a minute, but it's very important to note that all of these people, whether they be judges, presidents, economists who have stood in the way of this system, seem to have met with misfortune one way or another, Eustace. You know?
Well, they really disappeared from history.
And they very, very seldom have ever been mentioned.
Not at
by
all.
Anyone in the media who would not have the courage to mention them in the first place, but if they did, they too would find out there's a new job, and their job is in the basement collecting papers and filing them away.
But there's an opera side to this, because everyone who voted for the Federal Reserve System had a very enormous boost to their political career in Washington.
Well, I'll bet they did, huh? All right, we'll talk about that and much more coming up. Eustace Mullins, economist, author, and one heck of a patriot. Rick Adams, we'll be back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Get back at him with Rick Adams, the Radio Avenger, on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
All right, we are back with Eustace Mullins, and what I was referring to, Eustace, a moment or so ago, was this notice of refusal to allow an appeal in this case having to do with the Federal Reserve System. And apparently, very interesting, the legalese, I don't want to bore people with all of the specifics of it, because it can go on and on and on. But it is interesting to note that Martin V. Mahoney was the justice of the peace, Credit River Township, Scott County, Minnesota. And he has said that he was bound by his oath to support the Constitution of the United States and the laws passed pursuant thereto, and the Constitution and laws of Minnesota not in conflict therewith. This is an important case to both parties and involves issues apparently not previously decided before. So he was breaking some new ground here, Eustace.
Yeah.
Are you there?
Yes.
Okay. Who, were you chatting with someone?
Oh, I have a friend here. Dan Haley wrote The Politics of Medicine. It's a very good book.
Very good. Well, we'll have to have him say hello then.
Oh, yes. We'll do that.
All right. Dan, how are you?
He's just coming back from his place in St. Lawrence River, Canada. He's not about to see me.
Mm-hmm. Well, good for him. And he's going to be enjoying what we'll be talking about tonight. Maybe we'll have him on the program.
Well, I think
about
you
the
should.
Politics
because,
of medicine. Yeah.
His book, The Politics of Medicine, is being quite widely sold.
Great. Love to have it on. Love to have him on. Definitely. We'll talk to my producer, get the information at the end of the show, and we'll do that. We'll contact Dan. But anyway, this court was determined to obey the Constitution. As he said, here was a justice of the peace, and he was saying that he has no choice but to live by the every word of the Constitution. And, that's exactly what he did. And, of course, he did have problems after that, as you know.
Oh, he certainly did have problems. But, you know, every public servant in the United States takes an oath not to defend America or to defend the United States, but to take an oath to defend the Constitution.
Ha, ha, ha. What a laugh.
But they not only don't defend it, they don't even pay any attention to it.
Well, I really don't think most have ever even read it, to be honest.
No, they don't. They haven't read it.
They've heard about it. Yeah, they've heard about it. They've referred to certain specific sections of it out of context. They've mangled it and perverted it beyond any belief. So it is a waste of time, and that's what the Supreme Court debate is all about, too, about who the next justice will be. It matters not whether he's conservative or liberal, as long as he is not a constitutionalist. If he's a constitutionalist, then he must be shot down before he can be given a chance to be elevated to that post. But anyway,
Ezra Pound was indicted for treason by the United States because he defended the Constitution.
Say that again, Eustace?
Ezra Pound was charged with treason by Alger Hiss because he defended the Constitution.
Oh, Alger Hiss. Now, there was a great American.
Well, he knew treason when he saw it.
Yeah. He looked in the mirror and blinked, huh?
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. So that's poor Ezra paid a price for all that he did.
Oh, he paid a terrible price. 13.5 years.
Yeah.
And what he called the zoo, and he called it the hellhole.
Mm-hmm.
It was both.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a description of Congress.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, now this Federal Reserve system that was concocted in 1910 and then foisted upon the people in 1913, and, of course, along with it came the income tax and the direct election of U.S. senators, right?
Oh, yes, indeed.
So this was the beginning of a real revolution to destroy a republic.
It was, indeed. Because look at the kind of senators we have since they changed the method of electing senators.
Oy vey.
They've totally changed.
Well, all they do is look at behind them over their shoulders and pander to the public. And many of these people don't even not even citizens now voting. So they look at who can promise more and who can outdo the next guy or gal in turning us into a dictatorship. You know, there is no federal restraint anymore.
Oh, it absolutely
just,
none.
You know, turned the Constitution on its head, and these people, all of them, as far as I'm concerned, all of them should meet with the same fate as those people, the hoods, in the St. Valentine's Day massacre. In the station, fire them right up against the wall. As far as I'm concerned, we do need an all-night firing squad.
And
I would support that wholeheartedly. Because here they are, taking an oath, as you say, to uphold something and then violating it just as soon as they've taken the oath. Incredible.
Well, they don't even know most of the time that they are violating it.
Well, the thing is, that's even worse than knowingly doing it, I suppose.
Oh, certainly it is.
You know, to be ignorant and in the dark and not want to know, because then it will require more responsibility, I suppose.
Yeah, because they should not even be holding out office if they don't know what their responsibilities are.
No. No, absolutely not. And, the intricate nature of banking prior to the Federal Reserve System, these bought and paid for economists, as you've said, you know, they rewarded people now who supported the Fed. So Harvard, Yale, all these big colleges had their schools that were actually funded largely by powerful interests like the Rothschilds and Warburg. They had through fronts and set up tax-exempt foundations and then financed these departments, set up the chairmanship of the Department of Economics at some of these so-called prestigious universities. So, in essence, they were bought and paid for to peddle the Federal Reserve macro-microeconomic line, right?
Oh, yeah. And George F. Baker, who was J.P. Morgan's partner in the First National Bank, George F. Baker gave $25 million and set up the Harvard School of Business in 1920. One man put up the money for the entire school.
Mm-hmm. And they did it at Princeton also.
Oh, Princeton, and Yale, the same thing.
You know, and, the of course, the London School of Economics and Lord Keynes and the rest of them, you know. What a crowd of corrupt individuals.
Well, it was really quite a fraternity.
It was, wasn't it? And this is where you get into the Illuminati and the Knights Templar, and you get into all these secret societies, you know, and that you're involved in reading about, and you've read about, written about quite a bit yourself. So,
well, it's like the Bohemian Club in California, you know.
Right, the Bohemian Grove. Well, exactly. Now, we've established that this system was born out of secrecy. It's Federal Reserve System. Came out of nowhere, supposedly, and it created the First Depression.
The first major depression.
And how did it do that? Let me ask you the nuts and bolts now, because Eustace, you're great in economics. How did it create, just a few years after it was established, the worst depression ever in this country?
Well, it was done very simply. They simply raised the rates on short-term loans on Wall Street. And that caused the great crash of 29,
mm-hmm.
because nobody could meet their loans.
Mm-hmm. And at the same time, wages had been artificially high, I believe. They'd been inflated, and prices were falling, and, of course, you had unemployment as a result. And the solution then was that, you know, of course, capitalism had failed, you know, and good old FDR came in and told us, we've got to take all your gold, because that would be suicide. That would help to destroy our nation, and we want to save it. So all of a sudden, as we were pointing out last night on the program with Jeff Bennett, Roosevelt came along and said, we've got to steal your money. Only he didn't say steal. He said, we're going to help save America from financial collapse.
Well, he said we're going to confiscate the gold.
Mm-hmm. Well, he wouldn't use the word steal.
He didn't
use the
confiscate.
That's exactly what he did.
Yeah.
His administration did. And then resold the gold to Europe. Now, of course, that's nothing new. These people have been doing this for years, and yet these people are still lionized to this very day. Eustace, Roosevelt and company saved us from economic collapse, brought us out of the Depression, and won the wonderful war.
Oh, indeed they did. But after all, these people, these philanthropists, are the people who endow our universities and our churches and our schools and our hospitals.
Mm-hmm. That's true. That's true.
With all of their profits, with a small part of their profits, I should say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, before the Fed, we had this, you know, occasional corrections, if you will, the silver, the orchestration of the market through various and sundry government and banking actions in the 1890s, you know. In the 1890s, actually, there was a time when we had what was called as the Billion Dollar Congress. I don't know if you remember.
No, I don't remember that term.
They called it the Billion Dollar Congress because Congress actually raised and spent $1 billion. And that was it. No deficits, nothing. And that was in the 1890s. Can you imagine the whole federal budget, $1 billion, in a little over a century or so ago? And now look at it.
Oh, good gosh, it's gone through the roof.
Yeah, yeah. And all of it under the Federal Reserve.
Yes.
All of it under this great stewardship of these endowed men who are endowed with almighty knowledge of everything, trying to prevent us from losing our shirts. And yet that's exactly what they've done. They've sold us a bill of goods.
The campaign for the Federal Reserve System, one of the great marketing programs of that was they wanted an elastic currency.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they got one.
Well, you know what you can do with elastics.
Well, yeah, it can stretch it out infinitum.
Unbelievable, Eustace. This is just incredible.
Yeah, they were very forthright about it. They said, we have got to have an elastic currency.
Mm-hmm. Now, at the same time, there was the other school. There were the honest economists, the Austrian school, as it was known. You had von Mises, Ludwig von Mises.
Oh, yes.
And great men like Henry Hazlitt and other people.
Oh, Hazlitt was a great guy.
Yeah, and he spelled it out. You know, Economics in One Lesson was his most popular book with me. And, these guys were telling the American public, but, of course, the media wouldn't listen. They were bought and paid for by the same people. They were saying, if you don't have hard money, and you don't have a hard money currency, you're going to have total and complete upheaval. And that's exactly what they did.
Oh, yes.
So who can we blame ultimately for all of this, Eustace?
Well, Ezra Pound pointed out repeatedly that the American people simply did not understand the monetary system.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't. They were never taught to understand the monetary system.
Well, what really did the American public understand? I mean, you know, you had a few people... You know, the infancy of radio that were starting to speak out like Father Coughlin.
Oh, yes, indeed.
And I certainly don't agree with everything he said, his populism. I'm not an absolute populist. I do, you know, take a pretty much consistent right of center, more libertarian approach. But he made waves and he started rocking some boats. And they went after him hammer and tongs. And Roosevelt drove him off the air.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was done through his chief advisor, Frank Cuneo, who was a very wealthy industrialist in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And Frank Cuneo went right to the Pope and ordered him to take Coughlin on the air. That's how it happened.
Did you ever meet him, Father Coughlin?
No, I didn't. I've been to his shrine at the Little Flower Church in Detroit. It's a beautiful church.
Yeah. He did speak very much about the Federal Reserve.
Oh, he did indeed.
And he exposed it and the money changers, as he said, you know. Absolutely fascinating stuff that what he was dealing with, Henry Ford, him, and others, were rocking some boats there, and they had to be silenced as they had been.
Well, they had to be silent. But, you know, Father Coughlin spoke out as a priest.
Mm.
He had a religious objection to these money changers in the temple.
Yes. And he had a tremendous following, by the way.
Oh, he did, indeed.
In this country. In fact, I remember my grandparents talking about it and how great he was to listen to. And, they had ordinary common sense. So they knew they were being lied to, but they didn't exactly understand how. The American public, like even then... The newspapers were heavily dominated and controlled by these foreign banking interests, and the newsprint was basically bought and paid for by them. So World War I came along, and the next thing you know, Germany attacks. Germany's a bad guy, when in fact Germany had warned all the publications about the Lusitania and what England was attempting to do.
Yeah, they took advertisements in the New York Times.
Well, they tried to take it in a number of papers, and they turned them down.
Oh, I can bet.
And they turned them down because they were owned by the Rothschilds, and they didn't want the American people to know.
Well, the New York Times wouldn't have printed that ad today.
What's that?
The New York Times would not have printed that ad about the Lusitania today if you submitted it to them.
Mm-hmm.
They would reject it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that was one more example of what happened that previous century with the lies. And again, France and England could not pay the war debt to the Rothschilds, so they had to drag America into World War I again because America could pay. America could pay the debt.
Well, they could
do
it through the Federal Reserve System.
Exactly.
They could not do it until 1914.
They couldn't do it.
That's why the World War didn't start until 1914, after the Federal Reserve Act was passed.
Absolutely.
There would have been no World War I.
No, that's right. That's right. They all go hand in glove, don't they, Eustace?
They really do.
Fascinating. All right. Now, let me take a little time to ask our listeners if you'd like to join in, chime in. Here's your chance to talk to Eustace Mullins. And if you got a question or a comment, we'd love to hear it. Anything at all. 800-313-9443. That's all you have to do. Dial in. 800-313-9443. And we'll put you on with Eustace Mullins. And Eustace, I know you haven't, you probably haven't written a book or so in what, a few years now, quite a few years?
I'm writing all the time. I've got about 38 more books to write.
Published.
I've got to get back to work.
Have they been published?
No, these are new books. I have 38 new books to write.
38, wow.
Oh, yes.
God bless. What are the subjects?
Well, one is my autobiography, which tells how I got into all this study of the Federal Reserve System. And that's quite a story in itself.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure it is. And what are some of the others about? I'd like to know.
Oh, I want to do a biography of Senator Joseph McCarthy.
Good, good.
Who is one of my mentors. And I want to do a biography of a really great American who is not known at all, and that was the oil man, H.L. Hunt. H.L. Hunt was one of the finest patriots in the United States, but he's entirely forgotten today.
Mm-hmm. Well, they associate the Hunt brothers, you know, with a bunch of scoundrels
silver dealing.
Right.
Well, you see, H.L. Hunt himself never had anything to do with that. That was his sons.
Right, right.
And he would never have gone into a deal like that.
No, and H.L. Hunt certainly underwrote many of the programs that were on the air in the early 60s.
Oh, he certainly did.
Yeah, like the Dan Smoot Report and others, and tried to pay to bring the light of truth to the light
of day.
Well,
Dan Smoot was one of his first proteges.
Right, right.
He financed Dan Smoot's expose of the Council on Foreign Relations.
Which I have and have discussed many times.
Oh, good.
Excellent stuff. All right, we'll be back with Eustace Mullins. We'll pursue this and your calls when we return. Don't be shy. I'm Rick Adams. Stay tuned. Back now at 7 before the top of the hour. We have a bunch of phone callers waiting to talk to our guest, Eustace Mullins. So, Eustace, would you like to go right to some calls now?
Oh, yes, indeed.
Why don't we do that? All right, we got plenty of time to talk, God willing, and you just stay there and relax. All right, 800-313-9443 is the number. And first off is Dean in New York. Hello, Dean. Hello, Dean. Hi,
hello,
I can hear you now. Go ahead.
Well, hello. I'd like to say hello to Eustace and also to thank him for all he's done. I think I first heard Eustace 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's a wonderful American, and certainly he's one of my heroes. Eustace, I first learned about the Federal Reserve System a while ago, many years ago. I was lucky enough over the time to collect a few Series 34 notes that have the promise to pay in lawful money on it. And a lot of times I'll review things with my friends and I'll explain that to them. Eustace, could you clarify, were those notes actually redeemable in gold back in the day? And how would you actually do that?
Well, that's a good question. It depends entirely on what time frame they were issued in, as to whether they were required to be paid in gold or not, because the notes would specify how they should be paid.
Well, I know the notes that I have are dated 34. And,
34, yes.
Yeah, and I believe they read legal tender for all debts, public and private, but then the added clause, and it is redeemable in lawful money at the U.S. Treasury or any Federal Reserve Bank. Now, does that mean, Eustace, that a bearer of that note could actually have taken that to the Federal Reserve Bank and gotten gold for it?
Oh, yes, he could. But you see, because you were able to get gold or silver for it, most people did not do that because they considered it was worthwhile since it was redemable in silver or gold.
They thought it was the real McCoy, huh?
Yes, indeed.
Mm-hmm.
That was real money.
That is an amazing story. I tell my friends about it, and they just are amazed. I think if the American people understood the depths of the Federal Reserve, there'd probably be a revolt the next day.
Oh, there would indeed, because what it means is that the money is worthless.
Yeah.
And no one likes that worthless money.
I would like to just say to everybody to keep your eye out. I got those notes passed to me just in normal transactions a few years ago. I think they're still out there.
Mm.
You have to look carefully on them. You'll see a difference in the color. And if you can find anything that has the promise to pay on it, I know I've got a 50, I think, and a 20. I won't ever spend them. I use them to show my
friends.
Now,
what you should do there, Dean, is go to your local bank and tell them you want to cash it in for gold.
I heard that they were. I heard they'd be confiscated if you were to do that.
They would be totally confused by it.
They wouldn't even know what you were talking about today.
Well, no, the one teller didn't, because I looked at it right away, and I could tell. I said something to her, and she was clueless. So I just put it away in my little safety place, and I treasure it. I won't lose it. I show it to a lot of friends.
It's a collectible now, right?
Yeah, it is.
It's like a relic of the
past. Oh, those are very collectible. Any of those old bills.
Okay, well, again,
all right, Dean.
Thank you. And you're a wonderful American.
We appreciate that very much.
Thank you very much for calling.
Amen. All right. Let's start off with Leo now in Austin. And, Leo, hi. Welcome to the program.
Hello. How are you doing, Rick?
Good. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's an honor to call your program. It's a great honor to speak to Eustace.
Well, thank you. I got some very good callers from Austin.
Mr. Mullins, you're a fantastic student of history. I've heard you on several programs, and I was wondering if I could just reel off a few different subjects that kind of go way back. And
sure.
All
right, I'll tell you what. We got the break, the music coming on. Can you hold them until 1 minute and 15 seconds from now? We'll be back to talk again with Eustace Mullins. Rick Adams, we'll be back.
Censored. Radio Free America. Another exciting, informative hour is warming up. Rick Adams is on fire.
And yes, indeed, we are going to chitty-chatty again with Eustace Mullins, our economist, author, writer, and, of course, man for all seasons, as I like to say. And we will continue now with our caller, Leo, from Austin. Leo, you wanted to make several points for us, and go ahead.
Sure. I just wanted to touch on a few subjects and see if Eustace would like to address any or all of them. In the past, you've talked about the Babylonian Empire, the Khazars. If I were to bring it a little forward, do you have any thoughts on the Knights Templar and their effect on the Crusades, say the Priory of Sion, and how they were related? And were the Knights Templar like the first central bankers? And how do they relate to the foundation of Switzerland and even to possibly Columbus and the beginnings of the empire and the central bankers way back at that time?
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to get off the phone and then listen to the response on the air.
Okay. Fair enough, Leo. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Eustace, which would you like to tackle first?
Well, the Knights Templars were the first central bankers because, since they were knights, they also had their enforcement arm.
Mm-hmm.
And a banker without an enforcement arm is really in trouble. So they were a great success because of that. And
okay.
They became very powerful bankers all over Europe.
Mm-hmm. And what about the Knights of Aragon?
The Knights of Aragon, I think, were an offshoot of Templars.
Uh-huh.
It was one of their chapters.
It's interesting because they came up in the movie now that's out, The Legend of Zorro.
Oh, yes.
And it's a very good movie, actually, very well done. But in there, these people have hired people, you know, the knights there, to basically create nitroglycerin just prior to the Civil War, so that it would be used by the Confederacy. And that's supposed to be a bad thing, because remember, we have to maintain the Union. And if the United States is divided, that would destroy America. That was the line being fed. And that's what's fed in the film in that regard, just that small part. But
that's very interesting if things like that would creep in.
Yeah. It is interesting how they creep in. But, you know, that's what Abe Lincoln said. Remember, the war wasn't fought for anything else but to preserve the Union, right?
Oh, yes, preserve the Union. That's the whole thing.
But they would have you believe that to divide the Union, of course, by going back to the Articles of Confederation would destroy it. And nothing seems to be more obviously the contrary than the fact that the federal government is destroying all of the states and destroying the nation itself.
Yeah, the Articles of Confederation guaranteed every state the right to secede.
Mm-hmm.
Each state had complete autonomy.
Right.
But that had to be changed, and so the Masons had their convention in Philadelphia and wrote our present constitution, which did away with all those things.
Mm-hmm. There were several different constitutional drafts, weren't there?
Oh, many, many, many.
Many of them.
And
mm-hmm.
a lot of controversy over lots of them.
Mm-hmm. And the Masons getting involved, the Freemasons and these other secret societies basically destroying those concepts of true federalism.
Well, they were out to destroy them. That was the purpose. That was the whole purpose of that convention.
Convention, yeah. You're very, very wise, Eustace, to say that. Not too many people will admit that. I remember a preacher many years ago saying that, and he was just a humble little country preacher who had done his homework. And boy, I'll tell you, he did his homework, because now we can see it, looking back on history, how basically, as great as the Constitution is, it also created this federal government that's our tyrannical worst enemy today, I believe.
Oh, it did, the law of the land.
Yeah, and that's the tragedy of it, you know. But we have a break coming up now, and then plenty of time to get back to the phone. So, Kevin, you will be next, and others, you can get on the line now. There's a line or two available at 800-313-9443. Eustace Mullins, our guest, and a fascinating show. Thank you. We'll be back.
Today, we're all going to learn a new term. It's only two words. Now listen closely. Can all of you say constructive fraud?
Constructive fraud!
Did you ever get the feeling, as you're staring at the ceiling, that this game of life is played fair? Seems as fast as we can make it, there's a hand that grabs and takes it till they find us in a grave somewhere. Like a rodent on a treadmill, we keep pushing for it uphill, but we never seem to get too far. Well, if you think you're being taken, then you're ready to awaken to the truth of what we really are. We're all indentured, servitudinal slaves, overburdened and bewildered, feudal knaves, who have lost our soul posterity through ignorance and apathy. And now we're being taxed out of our graves. And as long as we stay passive, we'll succumb, contented with some socialistic crumb. Well, the naked truth and fact is, we're all saps who pay our taxes, and that is why the banksters keep us dumb. Could the state of our condition be the product of omission, what we didn't learn in public schools? And did our fathers all through history all fight and die for liberty so we could play the tyrant's fools? And can you call it education when it's all indoctrination to obey the hidden powers that be? Did we fight the revolution? Did we win the world wars just to slumber into slavery? We're all indentured, servitudinal slaves, overburdened and bewildered, feudal knaves, who have lost our soul posterity through ignorance and apathy. And now we're being taxed out of our graves. And as long as we stay passive, we'll succumb, contented with some humanistic crumb. Well, the naked truth and fact is, we're all saps who pay those taxes, and that is why the banksters keep us down.
Ralph Franklin and Eleanor were telling us they hated war. They made a deal behind our backs. They said the bankers could enslave us for a portion of our wages, and today we call it income tax. But what they failed then to tell us was the way they planned to sell us into statutory slavery. Now it's called constructive fraud. Some even claim the wrath of God. I call it social insecurity. Let's stop being indentured servitudal slaves, overburdened and bewildered feudal knaves, and reclaim our lost posterity. Rise up and proclaim liberty. It's high time we rock the boat and make some waves. 'Cause as long as we stay passive, we'll succumb. They'll starve us on their communistic crumb. And the naked truth and fact is, we don't have to pay those taxes. Yes, it's time we show those banksters, those international gangsters. So let's turn the tables and spoil all their fun.
All right. There you go, Eustace Mullins. Music to your ears, undoubtedly.
Oh, that is really wonderful music.
Well, that's Carl Klang, you know. You've heard of Carl.
Oh, I've been in many meetings with Carl Klang at which he performed.
He is great. Absolutely
is really
a treasure. We've got to get him back on the show soon, too.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, let's go back to the phones. We've got Kevin and Doug, and you can be next at 800-313-9443. Kevin in Austin, hello.
Hi, Rick. Thanks. I like your show, and I like your theme song because it, you know, I like it's kind of it's cool.
When we open
and,
the show, yeah.
Yeah, I like that because I associate it with you now, and you know, some good information comes from your show. I appreciate
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a question for Mr. Mullins about gold. You know, the way they sell it, and I got two questions actually. One is about just generally about, you know, bullion versus these $20 1880 coins that you get. And it's like for an ounce you get, it's like, I don't know what it is today, but it was like, the comparison was like $4.40 for a bullion coin, like a maple gold leaf or an American mm-hmm. gold coin.
Yeah.
And but the one that they try to sell is like a $20 gold piece, and it's $590 for an ounce. So it's ounce for ounce, but you're paying $150 more for, I guess, is that because they can't confiscate it or something? Why would you want to, you know, that's my question, is why would a person buy, you know, one of these old coins that's a collector coin instead, if it's just 1 ounce of gold and the bullion is 1 ounce of gold, costs $150 less.
Okay.
Well, coin collecting is very arcane. I'm not a coin collector, by the way, and
okay.
I don't have any gold coins at all, so I wish I had, but...
Yeah.
They have their own pricing system. They relate to rarity and things like that, intangibles, and you really have to be in that business to be up on that sort of thing.
Okay. So the other side of this question, or the next part of the question, is do you foresee like a collapse of the fiat currency coming down here in the near future?
No, because it was worthless to start with, so what would it collapse from?
Oh, well, I guess that's a good point.
Well, see,
compared to the euro, perhaps.
If you think about it this way, Kevin, mm-hmm. and you look at how the people have all been accustomed to using these notes now, they wouldn't recognize real money if they saw it. You can keep devaluing it and devaluing it and devaluing it until you force people to go into a cashless society or a totally different mode of doing business. And that would be just like this card. The debit card would be something that we could have basically emblazoned on our wrists, our foreheads. We can have all of this just like a bank ledger. You know, today they don't create currency or paper and say we're going to make an entry into that bank account. It's all electronic funds that are created out of nothing, you see, and that's why the money system, they can continue this Ponzi scheme, I think,
yep.
and this con game for almost indefinitely, right, Eustace?
Well, they certainly can. You know, people say that, well, will there be a collapse? But why should there be a collapse? They continue to use it, and it's used in commerce. So
incrementally,
no collapse in that.
Mm-hmm.
They'll just squeeze the value out of it little bit by little bit. Just,
oh, yes.
Just, I guess what we end up paying for, the houses will go from, you know, what they used to be $40,000, now they're $400,000, and then they're going to go up to $800,000. Is that
where
it's going to go, right?
Well, that jump was really amazing. You know, a house used to be $10,000, then it went to $50,000, $100,000, then it went to $200,000, $300,000, $400,000. Condominiums, little break-off apartments, are selling for $400,000 a piece in Washington, D.C. right now.
I don't know. Some people must be making a lot of money because, you know, I can't do that kind of thing. But I'm seeing it even here in Austin, relatively small houses, you know, the preferred neighborhood, but a relatively small house was, it's a fancy neighborhood, I guess. It was $800,000, but it was an old house and not very big. Anyway, thank you, gentlemen.
Yeah, thank you. I should add to this discussion also the element that people think, on the other hand, may happen. A scenario where we have such a devalued Federal Reserve note that people will see a hyperinflation at some point, like there was in Germany after World War One. Do you see that as a possibility either, Eustace?
No, I don't see hyperinflation in the cards at all.
Mm-hmm. I don't
either. The 1923-1924 German thing was engineered as part of the reparations process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the reparations after the war were an incredible burden on Germany, weren't they?
Well, that was all authored by one person, Bernard Baruch.
Yes.
And he set up that whole deal.
Mm-hmm. Very
was
true.
Was that to make it easier for the Germans to pay it off by they just...
They told the Germans that was the method. But actually what they were doing was forcing the entire German nation into bankruptcy through hyperinflation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Pretty nice deal, huh?
Oh, yes.
Have you got a license to steal?
Everybody got what they wanted out of it. That's a nice thing.
Well, if you got a license to steal, I guess it's pretty darn good if you're a thief.
Oh, absolutely. There's nothing like it.
Yeah. I mean, it puts the Brinks robberies and all of the Jesse James to shame, doesn't it?
Oh, they were all small-timers.
They were pikers in comparison to this.
You don't see any Federal Reserve people going out and robbing Brinks.
No. No,
they don't have to.
They don't. They've got the Brinker Buster right there in Washington, New York, and all the cities that they're in. Okay. Well, thank you very much for your
gentlemen.
Call, my friend. And we are going to continue in a moment. But you know, I raised the specter of hyperinflation, but also the concern over transforming us into a cashless society is not really, to me, you know, something that we should think of as fantasy world. I think that's very likely to happen.
Oh, yes. That's practically cashless right now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, everybody's using credit cards.
Mm-hmm.
That's about as cashless as you can get.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, there's so many angles we can go to here and figure what's their next move, blah, blah, blah. You know, just today we had the retired Federal Reserve Chairman, Alan Greenspan, talk about his concerns about deficits. And I got a kick out of saying he's not even laughing now. He's smiling, but he's not laughing. Talking about the need to control the deficits, because if we don't, we're going to have a serious inflation problem. Now, you and I both know, Eustace, that without deficits, the Federal Reserve system itself could not function.
Oh, yes, this is deficit financing.
That's what it's all about. I mean, and no economist has any brains, it seems, today. Just like media people don't have intelligence, they don't question anything, and they don't scratch their little wooden heads and say, wait a minute, hold on, it doesn't make sense what he just said. You know, everybody's too damn dumb to understand, as one man once said. All right, stay where you are. We got more callers. We'll be right back. Eustace Mullins, our great guest, and you can be part of the program. I'm Rick Adams.
Don't feel like the Lone Ranger. You've got the Radio Avenger on your side.
Hey, Rick Adams, come on. Hey, turn your horse radio on. Rick Adams on. Ouch.
Well, thank you, gentlemen on horseback. We are back with Eustace Mullins and Radio Avenger, the Paul Revere of Talk Radio. right here on Republic Broadcasting Network. And where do you get programming like this, right? All right, let us now, Eustace, take a call from Douglas in Bastrop. Hello, Douglas.
Well, hello, Rick. Eustace.
Yes.
Eustace, I've been fortunate enough to be represented by a friend of mine, Ron Paul, for the last 20 years, and he does understand the monetary system.
Oh, he does indeed. I campaigned for Ron when he ran on, as a Libertarian candidate for president.
Right. And Ron makes the analogy that having elastic money and this and that and other, it would be the equivalent of having elastic measuring tapes. You just stretch them as far as you want, or you retract them, do whatever. It's not conducive to an honest commerce exchange, is it?
Mm-hmm. No. Absolutely not, Doug. Hard money, gold currency, gold back, that's the only kind of money upon which true civilizations are built. And I've always said that, you know, from my study of economics, that the so-called soft money or the fiat currency will destroy a nation within a century, if not sooner. And it looks like that's where we're headed.
Oh, it certainly does. This fiat money is flooding the whole world. In fact, I saw some stories recently. You have no idea of the counterfeiting of American money, $20 and $100 bills, that's going all around the world.
Well, how do you counterfeit something that's really counterfeit to begin with?
Well, it is counterfeit. It's fiat money, and it's money created out of nothing.
Uh-huh.
So
you might be in violation of a trademark, or you might be copying something, but how can you be counterfeiting something that's not lawful to begin with?
That's amazing. In fact, the Federal Reserve was set up in violation of the Constitution,
yes,
which demanded gold and silver money.
Mm-hmm. Doug, go ahead. You wanted to say something.
Yeah, well, what I was going to say is when you're creating something out of nothing, you're printing up little worthless pieces of paper, how can you violate that? You know,
copyright infringement might be, you know, or trademark violation, but that's it.
At best.
I question.
Right.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right. I mean, how do you do it? I get a kick out every time I go to the post office, you know, and I try to cash or make out a money order, rather, with a larger bill, a $50 bill or $100 or whatever. They put it under a microscope. They examine it. They call in all sorts of professionals and obscenes. I get a kick out of that. What in the world are you doing, you know?
Oh, the post office has quite a routine on things like that.
Well, and they're training all the businesses and all the people now not to accept these large bills because they could be counterfeit too, just like the small ones, you know? Wasting time. And actually, as I said, if it wasn't so tragic, it would be humorous, wouldn't it, Doug?
The thing is, gentlemen, they're accepting an IOU that's supposedly a note which doesn't meet any of the qualifications of a real note.
That's right.
And they're accepting a little IOU by this corporation. Why couldn't I just write them an IOU that says, you know, I owe you this much money?
Well, you should be able to.
Bye.
If somebody's willing to go along with you and you get the force of law to protect you, why not?
Yeah.
Right?
I understand that.
Hmm.
I am sort of aware of what's going on.
Uh-huh.
Sort of.
I don't think you want to be aware of everything. It's frightening.
No.
The more you learn, the more you get angry. This is really, it is the essence of conspiracy, you know. They talk about arresting people for conspiracy to engage in fraud, and here you got these people, the Federal Reserve System, doing that on a scale that would make all the robber barons in history look like chicken stealers, you know.
But I agree with my friend. I have a friend here in Austin that he thinks that the only real money is silver, because it's the dollar is defined in the Constitution as, I think it's 371.25 grains of silver, mm-hmm. and that's all it's ever really been defined as. And, you know, these money traders talk about, you can buy gold and do this and that and other, or junk silver. And he called in stat mail the other night, and he said, there's no such thing as junk silver. Silver is what our system is based on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can get the little old coins, pre-63 coins that are silver. And that's real money is silver.
Mm-hmm. That's right. It's a marketable commodity as well. And that's what it should be. Thank you very much, Doug, for your call and support for Eustace. And Eustace, by the way, before the break, can you give us your website or how people can get in touch with you again?
Oh, yes. My website is EustaceMullins.com.
Yeah, very easy
and
to remember.
And my current book's available and so forth and things like that.
All right. We'll give you your address, too, when we come back, and we'll take more calls.
Oh, very
Stay
good.
Tuned. Rick Adams and Eustace Mullins on Uncensored. Radio Free America. We'll be back in just a few.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Okay, we're back with the program. And Eustace Mullins, our guest. Eustace, did you want to give out your street address or your P.O. box or whatever for people who might wish to write?
I'll give the street address
down.
Because it's what I'm using mostly now. At
right.
126 Madison Place, and that's Stanton, Virginia, 24401.
And Stanton is spelled what now? S-T-A-N-T-O-N?
S-T-A-U-N-T-O-N. The U is silent.
Okay, S-T-A-U-N-T-O-N,
oh, yeah.
Virginia.
Uh-huh.
All right. Now, did you get a lot of feedback the last time you were on?
Oh, yes, I got quite a bit.
Good, good. Is anyone helping you put together a repertoire for the Internet and do some maybe some potting, some iPotting?
Oh, yes, I've got people working on those things.
Good, good. Excellent. You are a national treasure, that's for sure.
Well, I'm really a busy national treasure. I've got a lot of work to do.
38 books, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, yes.
And you're working on them at the same time?
Oh, yes. I
wow.
put in just about 18 hours a day.
Oh, God bless him. And he's, what, 82 now? 83, right?
83.
God has been good to you, Eustace.
Well, I intended to retire at the age of 75,
mm-hmm.
but I haven't gotten up to it yet.
Well, give it another 10 or 15 years, God willing.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Let's say hello to Joe, our Bible man. Hello, Joe. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Rick.
Yes.
How are you, and how is Eustace?
Very well, thank you.
Eustace, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine, thanks. Good to hear from you.
Good to hear from you, too. Hey, you guys were talking about Zorro earlier.
Yes.
Well, you know, in the ancient Hebrew, the Z, Zane, it's called in the Hebrew.
Uh-huh.
It means 7,000.
Mm.
You know, Zorro always made the mark of the Z.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Whenever he left.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there were 7,000 in the book of Romans 11:4.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I reserved to myself 7,000 that will not bow and eat a Baal.
That's right.
But over in the book of Revelation, chapter 11, verse 13, 7,000 perished. That's the exact opposite, 7,000.
Uh-huh.
Who perished when the two witnesses rose in the streets of Jerusalem. Interesting. Very positive as a negative.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd like to give a theory, if I could, about the Federal Reserve System.
Sure.
In Deuteronomy 27 gives the curses and the blessings. You know, many of the ministers in our country and across the Christian mm-hmm. nations of the world, they never dwell too much or too long on those curses. I never hear them talk about them.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting, in a couple of verses out of that book of Deuteronomy 28, verse 36, the Lord shall bring thee and thy king, which thou shalt set over thee, unto a nation which neither thou nor thy fathers have known. and there shalt thou serve other gods, wood and stone. Down to verse 43, the stranger that is within thee shall get up above thee very high, and thou shalt come down very low. He shall lend to thee, and thou shalt not lend to him. He shall be the head, and thou shalt be the tail. You see, the stranger is a person we call on your program, Rick, the Kenite.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
I'm going to keep this short, but I want to make these points first before I make my statement. The Federal Reserve Bank, Eustace, what connection or what is the parallel between the World Bank today and the IMF to the Federal Reserve? Could you help me with that?
Oh, yes. It's all part of the same institution. See, the World Bank actually pays some of our salaries of our officials in Washington. They're not paid by the national government. They're paid by the International Monetary Fund.
I see. And also, I'd like to say this, Eustace. Do you think it's very important at this time? You see, I see the World Bank and the IMF giving large donations to different countries of the world to help them out, to bring them up to the same standard. And, of course, their main objective today is to get all the nations of the world on the same economic spectrum or same keel so that it all operates equally and efficiently.
Oh, yes, that's part of their agenda.
So it's very important for them to keep all the nations of the world and all the workers in those nations working. This is very important to them.
Or
they want
slaving.
Those slaves out there working.
Right. Slaving, that's what I said.
Very, very important to keep them
mm-hmm.
busy working. And
two, three, four jobs, right?
Yes. Keep them away mm-hmm. from that book known as the Bible. Don't let them ever get into that book.
No.
So let's keep them busy with three or four jobs, paying that big home that they own with
that
the Bible.
That treadmill. They're on that treadmill, right?
Uh-huh. Right. Now, my conclusion is this. We see that true Israel would be the lender to other nations and borrow of none, Deuteronomy 15 and 28.
Mm-hmm.
You see, to be blessed, you have to be the lender and not the borrower. Now, how could a small nation like Jerusalem, which we know that would be the capital of the one world government right at the end of this age, how could that city be powerful enough to be lending to all nations of the world?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you see, if we created a bank that was not tied to the United States, which is true Israel, where the 12 tribes dwell, but it's also written in the scriptures that Israel would lose all trace of her lineage. Isaiah 42, Hosea 1,
mm-hmm.
Romans 11,
mm-hmm.
25. So how would you take this blessing away from true Israel, which the United States holds here, and of course all the other Christian nations of the world, and have Jerusalem take over that blessing? Well, that would happen if Jerusalem controlled the Federal Reserve Bank.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if Jerusalem controls the Federal Reserve Bank, Jerusalem would now be the blessing to all nations of the world.
Mm.
And they would be the lender and not the borrower.
Mm-hmm.
You see, in the millennium, when we're not in flesh bodies anymore, which is when the millennium takes place, there are people in this world today that are trying to copy Ezekiel 40 to 44 while they're still in a flesh body. And therefore, the largest deception in the history of the world is taking place. So, watch Jerusalem, watch the Federal Reserve, watch the connection between the two.
Mm-hmm.
And they will be a lender and not the borrower to the world. mm-hmm. and they will have stolen a birthright away from true Israel. Now, I don't speak of the good figs that are in Jerusalem. In fact, I would like to warn them at this time, the good figs, that they should flee to the mountains. Very important.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, flee Judea. Judea is the geographical area surrounding Jerusalem. And that's all I got to say, guys.
Well, it's food for thought. You tied it in beautifully to the money system, and that's one of the four hidden dynasties, really, when you come right down to it, isn't it?
Oh, it certainly is.
The money system is key to upheaval, depression, recession, new world order. All of this would be impossible if, in fact, these people did not have this banking, criminal banking system, because it's really not a banking system. I mean, a banking system really is supposed to be legitimate and honest. It's really a system of plunder. I call it the plunder reserve system. And that's basically what it is, plunder on a grand scale worldwide. And, you know, before you leave, Joe and Eustace, you know, the post-World War II era, you understand why World War II was fought only if you understand what followed it. The Bretton Woods Agreement, which you're familiar with, obviously, and what followed the Bretton Woods Agreement in Vermont, and what happened with the World Bank, the IMF, all of these were byproducts. These were the illegitimate children of this illegitimate war, World War II, weren't they?
Yes.
Weren't they, Eustace?
Well, they certainly were. Well, the war was predicated on the fact that Italy and Germany mm-hmm. had opted out of the central bank system.
That's right.
And they had to be brought back into the fold. That's all that was there. That was the ideology of fascism and Nazism. Mm-hmm. There was no ideology involved. It was purely a banking operation.
Mm-hmm. Does that sound familiar, Joe?
Yes, Rick. Can I do three verses and tie it all in together?
Yes, by all means.
Just at the end of this earth age, just before we go into the millennial age, not in a flesh body, by the way, mm-hmm. listen to these verses. Four verses and I'm out of here. Zechariah chapter 8, verse 21. And the inhabitants of one city shall go to another, saying, let us go speedily to pray before the Lord and to seek the Lord of hosts. I will go also.
Mm-hmm.
Yea, and this is when Satan himself has got a seat. Yea, many people and strong nations shall come and seek the Lord of hosts in Jerusalem and to pray before the Lord, thinking that he is Jesus returned.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh, the false.
23.
Mm-hmm.
Thus saith the Lord of hosts, in those days it shall come to pass that 10 men shall take hold out of all nations of all languages of the nations. Sound familiar? All the nations of the world?
Uh-huh.
And the 10 men of Revelation, 10 kings, even shall take hold of the spirit of him that is a Jew. I meant to say Kenai. Saying, we will go with you, for we have heard that God is with you.
And that's it?
That's it, Rick.
That's it, Joe. All right. Thank you very kindly.
Thank
it's
you.
A pleasure. All right. 800-313-9443. Yeah, we're in some very interesting times today that we live in. And all of the signs seem to point to the Middle East and to Jerusalem as the city we're talking about. And I know some people don't believe that. They believe America's become the Babylon, will be the Babylon of end times. I'm not one of them, but that's okay. It doesn't matter. Babylon is back, it's here, and it is going to bring about the destruction that will come. Mystery Babylon, this number 666, the number of the beast, the system, created by Cain, essentially. And this is what we're dealing with today, Eustace. Spiritual wickedness in high places. And boy, I'll tell you, you don't have to look very high to see the spiritual wickedness today. I mean, you know.
Well, you know, I have never seen mentioned since the Iraq War started
uh-huh.
in March of 2003, I have never seen mentioned in any newspaper the fact that our troops are fighting in Babylon.
No. Well, I haven't either.
And you won't see it mentioned anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
They'll mention Baghdad, but they will not mention Babylon.
Mm-hmm.
And we are in Babylon.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's a good point. There's a good allegorical point to be made here. And, you know, the excuse has to do with oil, but it's going way beyond oil.
Oh,
now.
Yes, indeed.
It's money. Down. It's the mm-hmm. banking system. And most of all, it has to do with the city of Jerusalem for reasons that many people might not understand, but it's prophetic, it's spiritual, and there's a real deep, very deep biblical point to this about the seat of Jerusalem and the mercy seat in the end times. You see, Satan is basically trying to take over that seat from God.
Oh, yes.
And this is an angelic war that we're fighting. It's not just flesh and bodies and flesh and blood and human beings. There's spiritual forces alive and well on planet Earth, thank you. And we see them all the time. And, you know, these cabals that you have pointed out in many of your books and articles, Eustace, certainly are, all they do is just, you know what they say? The names have been changed to protect the guilty, not the innocent, right?
That's exactly it.
That's exactly what has happened.
Oh, yes.
And we, you know, we're in some tough times. Now, you've painted a ray of hope here at some point, and you feel that people are beginning to wake up and see through this, and they are going to, they're not going to go down. They're not going to go down without a fight.
Well, I've always been optimistic because we're on the side of the Lord.
Mm-hmm. Right. Regardless of what happens, we win then, huh?
Oh, yes.
The good will win over the evil. The good fig over the bad fig. That's important to note, Eustace. And,
yes, and remind ourselves constantly of this.
Mm-hmm. I think that's probably what kept you going all these years.
Oh,
huh?
It has been, because, as a matter of fact, without faith, I wouldn't have lasted a year.
Is that right? That's tremendous.
Because I've had great pressure on me.
No, you have shown that faith without works is dead, and you believe that works are essential. And, boy, you produced a tremendous amount of works. One of the things I also want to get into, there's so much to get into. We haven't had time. Just now we have some free moments, but if anybody wants to get in at the end, we can do that right now. Take your call in the next few minutes, 800-313-9443. 800-313-9443 is the number. I'm Rick Adams. One thing, Eustace, has to do with this, again, this system of the central bank, and one telltale sign, I believe, that the system is not government-owned or government-run whatsoever is this little thing called audits. And, you know, we're told that the Federal Reserve audits itself.
Oh, yes.
Now, where did you ever hear of any government agency auditing itself, taking care of its own books, managing to come clean, supposedly, and attend to its own inspection without any outside supervision? Where, I ask?
Well, you know, the FBI always investigates itself.
Oh, yeah?
I've never been an outside investigation of the FBI.
Well, at least we pretended congressional oversight, right? When has there ever been any real congressional
oversight?
Well,
most of that is cover-up.
You remember the House Banking Committee Chairman, Henry Gonzalez, when he tried to do that? What happened? He tried to kill him three times.
Oh, good heavens, yes. He was lucky to escape with his life. And you've never heard of Henry Gonzalez since? He went back to Texas, so that's the last time his name was ever in the papers.
Yeah, but I remember quite well communicating with him. Many others did, and he was pretty open.
Oh, he was indeed.
Very
well, Texas,
interesting.
Texas is still the forefront of the crusade for freedom.
Amen. All right, we'll be back to wrap up with Eustace Mullins, and we'll do that in just about 3 minutes. I'm Rick Adams.
Hitting them pretty hard and knocking them right out of the park. Rick Adams is on. Right on. On base, on point, on RBNLive.com.
Oh, boy, how fast time has gone by tonight. Eustace, we're almost out of time. We've done almost 2 hours, and I really don't know where the time has gone.
It's been a very enjoyable time for all concerned.
Yeah, I mean, when you're on it, just I enjoy it because what I like about you is not only your wealth of knowledge and everything else, but you're the easiest guy to chat with on the program because you're just so down to earth. You're very, you know, very happy-go-lucky, gentlemanly-like, and you're brief and to the point. You don't you're not just
venturing on. Well, we have a lot of territory to cover, and know, I'm not dogmatic. I'm not hammering home a particular point of view.
No, I know.
Because I'm interested in the truth.
Right, that's absolutely. You're not hawking a lot of materials, books, tapes, and stuff either, right?
Oh, no, and I've been on programs with so many people that did nothing but pitch from the time, from the first word they opened. In fact, I used to be criticized at a lot of my meetings because I didn't spend any time promoting my books.
I know
that. I always had more important things to talk about.
I know that. No, I think that's just marvelous of you. And there are very few people in this world today that I can point to as being in that type of, scenario. And you're one of them. And thank you very much for that. Now, again, I want people to know that people are working with you. But you can always probably use a little more help. And people want to help you in some way, get the word out. They can do that by writing to you or contacting you, I guess, on the website. Is that right?
Oh, yes, indeed.
And the website, again, is eustacemullins.com. And your address again, very slowly. People can take it down. Go ahead, Eustace.
Oh, my home address?
Sure.
Oh, 126 Madison Place, Stanton, Virginia, 24401.
Pretty easy.
And you can remember it because Stanton was the birthplace of Woodrow Wilson.
No, my.
Who gave us World War I, World War II, the federal income tax, and the Federal Reserve System.
I'm sorry to hear that.
And his birthplace is about 4 blocks from where I'm talking right now.
Uh-huh. Is that right? You are, it's just amazing. You are too much, Eustace. But anyway, I really treasure your works. And you mentioned just a few of the books that you're working on, but when do you expect to publish some of these or get them published?
Well, it'll be by June, I believe. I think I'll get all this done by June. I'm getting organized now. I was in the bank today. I'm reorganizing my finances, and I think I'll get everything done in the next 6 months.
Great. Oh, wonderful. And
it'll be such a blessing for these books to get out to people because they call every day and they beg for these books. And certainly I want them to have them because that information, The Curse of Canaan, is one of my most valuable books. Mm. That's the one that they call and they plead with me for it.
Yeah.
And I'm going to get them that book as soon as I can.
Well, by all means. And I'll be one of the first to get a copy. There's no question about that.
Oh, yes. Pastor Peters.
Mm-hmm.
Sold that book so badly on his radio program and that he sold out all of my books.
Yeah, that's what I'm told.
Oh, excellent. Yes, he did.
Excellent. Very good. Well, you need to sustain yourself and get some money back into the coffers there.
Oh, yes, indeed.
Keep
that's
yourself
very important.
Going, right. And, well, Eustace, thank you for being with us again
tonight.
Well,
I enjoyed everything.
And we'll do it in a couple of weeks again.
Oh, we will indeed.
God willing, now you stay
indeed.
Well. Bless you. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
All right. Eustace Mullins did it again. I'm Rick Adams. Tomorrow night, it's the Scott and Rick Show. Scott Smith, Rick Adams. And don't forget, Paul Revere and Patrick Henry. God willing, see you then, 8 o'clock Central. Bye-bye now.